from the Gothic Quarter in Barcelona. This is Market Movers, the podcast that gives you a closer look at the financial markets to trade responsibly. Here are your hosts, Lior Cohen and Yochai Elam.
Hello and welcome, and thank you for listening. Welcome to another installment of Market Movers. I'm your co-host, Lior Cohen, and joining me, Yochai Elam. Hi, Yochai.
Hi, Lior. Great to be here once again.
Today, we're going to talk about the correlations, how to use it, and how we might be abusing it. We're going to talk also about the latest developments in the U.S.-Russia feud. How does it impact oils, gold, and the forex markets? And finally, we'll sign off with the British pound. Does it lose its shine, and where? And is it in a critical junction, and what's up ahead for it? So let's kick it off with something about correlations. Yochai, you use a lot of correlations when you examine forex and other assets compared to another, right?
That's right. Especially looking at dollar-yen, we can see a huge correlation between dollar-yen and U.S. yields and dollar-yen with stocks. There used to be a good correlation between the euro and European bonds, but that's broken at the moment.
Okay, that's cool. So one of the things when we use it is we have to think about what are the assumptions that we put into it, how do we use it, and what are the problems when we're facing and looking into correlations between assets. Now, for one thing, correlation thing that we use in order to see the relationship between two asset prices. For instance, if we want to see the correlation between the yen and U.S. stocks, we can use a correlation. Or in commodities, with the relationship between the oil and natural gas prices. Correlation usually runs between 1 and minus 1. 1 means that there is it basically means it's the same asset. So usually not going to see one correlation. We're going to see something between 0.1 and 0.9. This means strong linear correlation between one price to another. When it's minus, it means a negative correlation. When one price goes up, this means the other price tends to go down. The other thing is if it's close to zero, if it's usually between 0.1 to minus 0.1, usually means that there is little correlation. We use it also a better understanding of how one asset moves and compared to the other. An understanding of maybe one asset moves the other asset. For instance, if the US dollar strengthens again most currencies, we could see that gold also tend to decline. But here lies also one of the caveats when using correlations, and that is that correlation doesn't imply causation. Just because asset prices tend to move in the similar direction, it doesn't necessarily mean that one asset has an impact on the other asset.
So it doesn't mean that one is a leading one and the other follows it.
Exactly. Just because we have two assets that are moving in the same direction or in different direction but have a strong relationship, as for instance the US dollar and gold, it doesn't mean necessarily in all cases that the US dollar is leading the way for gold. It could be. In some situation, it can be the case, but just because there is a correlation, it doesn't necessarily mean that one leads the other. The same goes, for instance, between gold and silver. Gold is a much bigger market than silver, and in most cases it does move silver. When gold tends to go up, silver will soon follow because they are in the same family group and they're precious metals. People that invest in gold tend also to invest in silver, but it doesn't necessarily mean that in all cases in other assets that strong correlation between two sets of prices, it means that one has to impact the other. So this is one thing that we should consider. The other thing is that the assumptions that go in, specifically there are two main assumptions that should be taken into account when people use correlations. For one thing is the distribution of the asset price. Normally, people just assume price asset has normal distribution. The normal distribution, as you well know, is something that's like a hump that goes sliding down, and most of the distribution is in the middle and a little bit at the edges. So roughly 95% of the distribution is in the middle, and the remaining 5% are in the fringe. Now this means that the chance of something to occur which is very unlikely, let's say something that is roughly 3-4 standard deviations away from the average, is very low.
The black swan event.
Yes, exactly. Now that means that there is very low chance of a black swan. And how low? It means that, for instance, the S&P to drop by 20% in one day has nearly zero chance of happening. It could have been something once in 100 years, 200 years. But in effect, we have seen it over the past 50 years more than once. And we can recall if it was back in 2007-8, the market collapse in 87, in 2000, in the early 2000s, or the internet bubble crashed. There are bubbles and they have occurred, and thus the distribution doesn't necessarily mean it's a normal distribution. It might be something else, something with a fat tail distribution called Cauchy distribution, but we're not into a math class, so it doesn't matter the name. We're just trying to figure out what does it mean. So it's more likely that there are other assets such as the S&P or oil or gold have a much more fatter tail distribution. So unlikely events, if you will, have a more probability of actually occurring. So this is one of the assumptions that go into when you use a correlation. So we might not be using correlation rightly so if the distribution, and this is the case in most assets, is not normal. The other thing to consider is that the linear relationship, and that means that when one price goes up, the other goes up. So when we have a linear correlation, it means that the relationship is constant throughout time. And this is also something that doesn't necessarily happen in most cases. So this is another assumption that go into when you use a correlation. So what does it mean to it? It means that when you use it, you should also take it with a grain of salt, because it might not hold up over time. The assets that you're looking for aren't a normal distribution, and also the linear correlation might not be linear. It could have other properties. Maybe it could be non-linearic, such as something that goes up throughout time, or something that is more of a curvature. So there are other possibilities that could happen, and thus you should take that into account. So the other thing is to consider is that when we have suddenly a sharp change in the markets, such as back in 2008, these kind of correlations will all evaporate and won't hold up. So when there are sharp changes in the high volatility and sharp moves, that's when you know that these correlations won't hold up, and that's when you should less consider them as more reliable. So these kind of things are more practices are more reliable when there is more of a steady state kind of economy, and where there's a very low volatility, and when there are other very, very low probability of sudden shocks. So that's when you could use it, and again, still use it with a grain of salt.
I'll just add that regarding the euro, we've seen recently the correlation between various bonds of European countries, such as Germany, Spain, Portugal, doesn't matter if they're core countries or peripheral countries. This correlation with the value of the euro has broken down. So if we're looking at euro dollar, the pair depends only at the moment, only on what happens in the United States. So it doesn't mean we're going to see a huge change of direction. We do see euro dollar dropping, but we're not seeing a huge move. But it does mean that European events, such as European indicators, will probably move euro dollar much less than any news coming out of the United States.
All right. So, okay, moving right along, we have the big news that coming not from the Middle East, even though that's something that it's pretty close to it, that's something that could have an impact on the financial markets, is the recent feud between the US and Russia following the tragic shooting down of the Malaysian airplane from moving from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur. These tragic events also had a little bit of an impact on the financial market. Specifically, we saw a sharp rise immediately following the escalation in the relationship between the US and Russia. There was a sharp rise in gold and oil and other commodity prices. But then it wind down a little bit, and now there's still big news coming from that region. But does it have any implications on the financial markets looking forward, and what does it mean for the fundamentals? So let's kick it off for you, Yochai. What's your take on the recent events, and how do you think these news could have an impact on the financial markets?
Well, last Thursday was quite deadly. Both Israel launched its ground offensive in Gaza, which is still going on at the time of this recording, and the Malaysian plane was downed by rebels, probably pro-Russian rebels, but we don't know that for sure. So what happened is the immediate reaction of fear. When the Russian stock market fell, that's natural, price of oil went up, and in general, stock markets also dropped. Now, if we look into currency markets, we saw on Thursday and in the days afterwards that the Japanese yen strengthened. The Japanese yen is a safe haven currency, not because Japan is safer than any other country, but because of the traditionally and almost omnipresent low yields in Japan. Just there, it means that the yen is used as a lending currency, as a carry trade, in order to buy higher yielding currencies. On Thursday, we had a really bloody day. In the afternoon, European afternoon, the Malaysian plane was downed, and later in that evening, Israel launched its ground offensive in Gaza. So we've seen some fear-related action in the markets. We've seen stock markets fall, especially in Russia, but not only there. We've seen the price of oil rise. We've seen the Japanese yen climb. The Japanese yen is considered a safe haven currency. Why is that? Not because Japan is safer, but because Japan traditionally has low rates and its currency is used to buy other currencies which provide a higher yield. So, in times of trouble, this money is repatriated, if you wish, or undone, risk is undone, and money flows into Japan. Or at least speculators think that money will flow into Japan and buy the Japanese yen. But after a few days, after it's not news, but rather just a situation, things are unwound. So what we've seen also on this occasion is a drop of dollar yen, for example, a drop of stock markets. And then when things don't actually calm down, but begin repeating themselves. I mean, many more people are killed in Gaza, and the tensions are still high between Russia and Ukraine. But there is nothing really big that's new. So what's going on in the markets is we're seeing recovery. We're seeing dollar yen and the yen in general. I mean, dollar yen rise and the yen in general fall back down. So what can we as traders do about this? If it's really, really bad news, okay, the reaction could be justified, but in most cases in the past few years, since the financial crisis, it just provides opportunity to buy the dips, if you wish. To seize the opportunity of fear, go against the trend. Yet again, I don't recommend using high leverage in these cases, but and taking the opportunity to profit on that. This thing began back in the 18th century or 19th with the Rothschild family, and it's relevant once again when there's blood in the streets. It's time to buy. That may be a bit harsh,
but that's reality. That's how you make money.
Yeah. Markets continue to operate, and we have chances here. More safe haven currencies. The dollar is also sort of a mild safe haven currency, also because it's the reserve currency of the world and it has low yields for the past 5 years. The Swiss franc used to be a safe haven as well, but the past 3 years, or nearly 3 years, it's pegged to the euro, making it basically irrelevant and quite a boring currency. So in currency markets, the yen is the real focus in times of fear.
So we saw that following the news after that, we saw immediate rise in buys for the yen, and then and now you see that it's gonna come down a little bit.
Yeah, we've already seen the yen come back down against the US dollar from the peak that it reached in the immediate aftermath of these terrible events. So if we have another eruption of violence either in the Middle East or either an escalation of the tensions in Ukraine, we could see the yen strengthen again. But if no news from those regions emerges, I think the yen could continue descending, especially against the US dollar, which is on the rise.
Oh, so we'll see the yen continue to slowly descend and actually resume its descent that it already had in the past couple of years or so, because the Bank of Japan is continues with its efforts to devalue the yen against leading currencies, specifically the US dollar.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to see that. And in regards to the commodities markets, we saw that as the same way as the yen. Immediately after the news erupted last week, we saw a spike in oil prices, in gold prices. But after that, in the days that followed, in the last couple of days or so, oil prices came back down and lost most of its gains from last week. And when you look at the fundamentals, you say, hey, you know, Russia is still the second largest producer of dry natural gas and the third largest of liquid fuels in the world, then that means something. And of course, it does mean, but since it doesn't necessarily mean that Russia will stop sending out oil for some reason, because it still produces 10.5 million barrels per day and exports 7 million back in 2002. So roughly 70% of its output it sells to other countries. And the U.S. it's only 4% of the U.S. imports come from Russia. So it's not a big player when it comes to the U.S. The U.S. won't have any direct implications and adverse impact from this kind of feud, at least from the oil perspective, and thus all the WTI, which is the US oil, should come down, won't be affected by much from the recent events in Russia. And even if tensions between Russia and US will continue to rise, it still doesn't mean that it will have any direct impact, at least for the US in regards to oil.
Right. Europe is more affected by any sanctions on Russia. It has much closer trade ties. And Europe, especially Germany, imports a lot of gas from Russia. France has an agreement with Russia to sell some warships. So we've seen European countries a bit reluctant to announce new sanctions on Russia, as they will suffer much more.
Yes, they suffer much more, and still the Brent oil still has a premium over the WTI, so the Europeans are paying much more for oil than the US. Not to mention that when it comes to gasoline prices, there's also the taxes that they are implemented throughout Europe, but none in the US. So for the price per gallon in Europe is significantly more higher than in the US, so nobody want to hold on to this third rail and start putting some sanctions on the third largest producer of oil, which could have some major adverse impacts on the oil market, at least in Europe and throughout Asia. So, okay, there's that. Okay, and moving right along, we have the British pound. It's losing a little bit of its shine. That's what you said, Yuhai. You have to back it up now.
Yeah, we had our chance to produce a lot of nice headlines with sterling and the shine and all these kind of headlines, but...
You're all full of puns.
Yeah, we're doing our best to push as many puns as possible. Anyway, we've seen the British pound strengthen very, very nicely against the US dollar, against the euro, also against other currencies. All the signs in the British economy have been positive. However, after pound dollar reached nearly 172... and Euro-pound dropped below 79 cents. Things have changed a bit for the British pound, especially against the US dollar. So here are the contradicting signs we've seen recently. On one hand, inflation is on the rise. It reached 1.9% in June, higher than expected and very, very close to the target. But on the other hand, wage inflation rose by only 0.3%. So once again, we have external prices rising, one-time effects, but people are earning less money. We've seen it also with the unemployment rate, which even though it dropped to 6.5%, which is already far off the original target of 7% introduced originally by the Bank of England, the good news does not translate into a stronger pound because, yet again, salaries are not moving fast. Other figures from the UK contradicting as well. Purchasing managers indices, forward-looking indices from market are strong. Services and manufacturing are around 57, 58 points, which means strong growth. And construction is even above 60, which means steaming hot growth. But we had an upset from the manufacturing production and industrial production. Manufacturing dropped by 1.7% in May. That was a big surprise. It contradicted the PMIs, and that was the first warning sign. Now moving on to what's going on this week, we have the meeting minutes of the MPC, the Monetary Policy Committee. It still showed a unanimous vote of 9-0 to maintain the interest rates unchanged.
By the way, this is what happened in the past, year or so, or even 2 years? When was the last time that it wasn't a unanimous vote? I mean, this is something that these guys are pretty adamant in keeping the interest rate unchanged. Is there any... does Carney seem to think he's going to change it anytime soon?
Carney did hint about raising the rates, but since he came into power, that was about 1 year ago, all the members of the MPC, the old ones, the new ones, everyone aligned by his measures and nobody dissented, something that we've seen several times in the past under previous governor Mervyn King, or better said, Sir Mervyn King.
Sir Mervyn King, yeah. Hail the king, but did the king, so the king had people that opposed him. That's what you're saying.
In fact, Sir King was outvoted more than once, especially towards his last days as the governor. But so far, everybody's behind Carney. We have potentials like Martin Wheel, Spencer Dale, members of the NPC that were expecting them at some stage to descend and to vote for an early rate hike. So far, this hasn't happened. However, the Monetary Policy Committee did send some shots across the bow. They said that the danger from rising rates to the recovery has receded. That means they're not afraid to raise the rates sooner. But will it happen? Not so fast. Yet again, we return to the issue of salaries. Slow wage growth means that there is more slack in the economy. Read the meeting minutes. And they also expect slower growth in the second half. So they're trying, I think, to manage expectations. I'm not sure they're doing it really well, but the data will tell us more. So we have the retail sales. They're expected to show a recovery in June after a drop in May. However, the early elimination of the England team in the World Cup might have a negative impact because it does impact sales. So we still have a residual impact from the World Cup on the UK economy.
Really? That has such a substantial impact on the UK economy?
Yeah, that's what all British experts, analysts say, that the sales of t-shirts, TVs, other merchandise related to the team, beer, everything.
Of course. Well, beer, of course. Yeah, that you don't have to convince me of that. Yeah, that's pretty self-evident.
Yeah, don't drink and trade, by the way.
Very sound advice. That's the only thing. I think we're gonna finish on the high note. That's it. Thank you and good night. Yeah. Don't drink and trade. Yeah, there we go. That's our new slogan.
Yeah. So, but just before we can begin opening our cans of beer towards the weekend, we have another last important release in the UK, and that's the first release of GDP growth for the second quarter of the year. The first release always has the strongest impact because it's the first one, of course. The next ones usually see very small revisions. Another thing to note is that we expect a growth rate of 0.8 quarter on quarter, and that's what we've seen in Q1 and also in Q4. Because the growth rate has been so similar or exact, same level of growth in the past quarters, any deviation from this, if it's 0.7 or 0.9, will likely have a strong impact on the pound. And the year-on-year growth rate is expected to be 3.1%, a bit stronger than 3%. That's higher than in the US. If we get these figures, I think the pound could resume its rises and bounce off the 170 level, which it when it's hovering above. But if we'll have another disappointment, 0.7 or even 0.6, the 170 level, which is a critical level, could be broken. More levels on the pound, from top to bottom, 170.190, the recent peak, 171.40, 171, 170.30, which is our friction point, 170, of course, and below 170, the next level is 169.40. More data is on our websites.
Okay, excellent. So you say that when it comes to the British pound, if we see suddenly that the GDP goes well above the 0.8% that it was in the past couple of quarters and what is expected now, we could see a sharp movement in the British pound.
Yeah, we can see a sharp movement on the immediate release and the hours afterwards, also in the days afterwards. This is quite a big release due to the fact that growth has been strong but very, very steady. Any move towards a different growth rate will have a strong impact for the weeks to come.
All right, so if we'll see suddenly, for instance, a 1% increase, they'll strengthen the British pound compared to other currencies. And
right, we could see 172 break on cable and 78 cents on euro pound break as well.
All right, thank you, Hai.
Thank you, Lior.
Thank you for another installment. Thank you all for listening. That's it. Until next time, this is Lior for signing off for Yochai, saying, and have an excellent week.
For comments, suggestions, and questions, visit the podcast page at forexcrunch.com or tradingnrg.com, where you can also find past episodes and subscribe to the show. Our listeners make Market Movers possible.